Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook, and the Pats now get to pay their attention right toward the AFC East Division because they've got not one, not two, but three straight divisional opponents to come. Two here at home, one on the road. So looks to me that we have arrived at the, shall we say, the junction point of this season, the make-or-break time, the do-or-die time, the focal point, the fulcrum, whatever you want to call it. This is the spot in the season. This is the spot in the season that's going to make or break this team. I'm convinced of it. What about you? Well, again, we welcome you inside the playbook. It's obviously a very, very special day in this country as we try to elect a new president. I can't say that I'm terribly thrilled with either one of the two choices, to be honest with you, although I did my my civic duty and did place my vote earlier this morning when the lines at the polls were low. I would be curious to note, and I don't really want to get into a huge political debate because I know on many of the talk radio stations that undoubtedly you're listening to today, including some of the sports talk radio stations, that invariably the topic is going to get around to politics. Politics, as we all realize, is a sport. That's just what it is. It's a game. It's adults playing a game. That's what it is. You run.
Starting in January, we're going to lay more pipe.
Yeah, well, you kind of have to turn things on its on the side here a little bit just to have some enjoyment out of it because, you know, it is a game, even though it probably shouldn't be, but it is. I'm not want to give my voting preferences, you know, when I'm asked by pollsters outside of a polling place, you know, the exit pollsters. I don't usually do that. Hello?
Did that happen to you today?
No. I saw some exit pollers early this morning, though, but I happened to whiz right by them, and they didn't stop me. And I usually don't do that. But I'm going to break from that tendency here, and I'm going to ask those of you who are listening to this program right now, okay? I'm going to ask you if you have voted today. And by the way, if you're listening outside the United States and you're an American citizen, did you absentee? And how long ago did you vote? But I'm going to ask you who you voted for. I think we should do a Patriots.com radio, such as it is, exit poll today. Let's find out who our Patriots fans prefer for a presidential candidate. You know, Barack Obama or, of course, the other guy, John McCain. you got to smile a little bit today, fellas, because and ladies, simply because, you know, it's just one of those days that can make you tear your hair out, you know, listening to all the campaign rhetoric and everything else. So, you know, I want to do sort of an exit polling strategy today. All right. So please, if you just do me the favor, if you want to reply anonymously, by all means. I would like to know, though, especially if you are outside the United States of America, if you voted in the election, obviously you did it absentee, who you voted for. And if you're listening in the United States of America, who did you vote for? Or if you haven't voted yet.
Starting in January.
If you haven't voted yet today, maybe you live in the West Coast, maybe you live in Hawaii or Alaska. Well, if you live in Alaska, I think I know who you're voting for.
Starting in January.
Exactly. Who will you vote for then? Who are you planning to vote for? Who do you support? I think we should do a little, you know, Patriots Playbook exit poll. So that's the one thing I wanted to ask you today, just in along with the fact that this is an election day. So I think we should do that. What's this?
This is Sarah by Fleetwood Mac.
Sarah by Fleetwood Mac. Thank you. It's too bad she's not going to be our vice president, by the way. We'd have a lot of fun with that. It's not going to happen. I don't mean to influence, you know, the voters if you have not voted yet. I highly encourage you because, frankly, based on the last two elections, every vote does count. So I don't want to dissuade anybody from voting today.
So if you want Sarah, get out there and vote.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I'm holding out hope. Look, like I said, I'm not enamored with either guy. I think both candidates actually have good points to them. Even Barack Obama. I think there are some things that, frankly, I do like about him. I voted today for John McCain. And the reason that I voted for John McCain was not entirely because of Sarah Palin. I voted for John McCain because he's more of a centrist, and I found myself a little bit more of a centrist politically. I will admit I was a dyed-in-the-wool, hard-edged, right-wing Republican several years ago. And maybe as I've gotten older, I've mellowed out somewhat. There are a lot of things that I've seen in this country in my travels, and especially working in charity circles, not-for-profit circles, that over the last few years that I've seen that have caused me, you know, to change my philosophy. And I am a perfect example of you can teach an old dog a new trick. You can, because I have learned some. So that's partly where I'm coming from. However, I did not vote for Obama today just because I believe that he's just not experienced enough for my liking. He's not experienced enough within our legislature. He's not experienced enough within our world culture. He's not experienced enough within our world politics and foreign policy. He's just not experienced enough. You know, if you told me that Barack Obama, if we could take the current day Barack and run him for president 8 years from now, I'd say you'd have yourself a slam dunk winner, most likely. He'd be older. He would have had 8 more years in the Senate. And he would have had an opportunity to gain that experience. I'm just nervous in this current day and age, in this world that we live in, having a guy who, you know, wants to go to the table with, you know, Syrians and Libyans and you know, Iranians. And I just, you know, come on. You got to know by now who your friends are and who are not your friends. And I'm not going to the table with someone who's not my friend. That's just what I don't believe in that. I don't think it's ever worked, you know, because people who you think are your friends are going to try to pull the wool over your eyes, and you have to fight fire with fire. You have to be you have to dictate policy, not have policy dictated to you. I'm all for this country being more self-sufficient. I'm all for this country pulling in the reins. I don't necessarily think we got to put, you know, you know, fences up on our borders. But I think we need to be less reliant on foreign oil. And we need to have, you know, partners to trade with that are willing to take our product as opposed to, you know, us taking theirs in and they're turning ours away at the border. You know, there are all sorts of things. All right. So now that you know a little bit more about me politically. That's how I am. I actually have run for office before. About 12 years ago, I ran for a local legislative position in the state of Rhode Island. I was a Republican, a registered Republican. I actually still am a registered Republican, but I don't really support any of the local Republican people. The reason I don't is because I think they all stink. I probably should unaffiliate from the Republican Party, but I guess there's just, you know, this little voice in the back of my head saying, don't do it. Don't do it. Be true to yourself. And so I haven't done that. But I found myself today looking at all of the candidates. I voted for a Democratic Senate candidate where I live. I vote for a Democratic House of Representatives, congressman where I live. And I voted for a Democratic state senator where I live. So that tells you I try to look at the candidate, and I probably should unaffiliate and become a registered independent. That's because that's really how I believe now. And I think more and more people in this country, quite frankly, believe like I do. I think that number grows almost every day. But I still consider myself a Republican because basically I am a fiscal conservative, a social moderate. And based on those facts and everything I've told you, I was a little bit more comfortable, not entirely, but a little more comfortable with McCain. And so that's where my vote went today. And I'm sure that you will, you know, if you care to share with me why you voted the way you did, I hope that you will, because, you know, there's no debate here. I mean, we're all going to vote whichever way you feel like the way you want to vote, or you've already voted. And we're going to have to live with whoever our choice is for the next 4 years. And just, you know, we're all going to try to work to make it better. Now, That's enough of the politics. But I did want to open up with that today because, quite frankly, I think it'd be interesting to see how Patriots fans vote and how Patriots fans side and who Patriots fans are supporting. Not that it means anything one way or the other. I just think it'd be an interesting little slice of Americana and an interesting little slice of the sports world. Find out what Patriots fans are thinking. And, of course, if you're not a Patriots fan, and I know that we do get a lot of listeners to this particular program from other teams around the league who surf to us through NFL.com, or we probably have a lot of Bills fans. I know we have a lot of Colts fans from time to time listening to the program because they don't have similar programming. I'd be interested to know how you voted as well. You don't have to just be a Pats fan. How about, let's just say, football fan? What is Football America voting for today? Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. And if you'd like to call, you may do so. 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number, and you can call in. All right. This normally is Nitpick Tuesday. And, again, for the uninitiated, we pick nits on Tuesday. We look back at the previous game, and even if it's a Patriots win, we find things that we don't like. And we pick some more until the scab bleeds, and then it can heal over for another day, and then we'll pick some more tomorrow. It's because that's what we do. Well, obviously, I think today we've all got several nits that we can pick, and so that's the other thing that I want to ask you today. What's your nitpick from Sunday night's encounter with the Indianapolis Colts? What one or two facets of the game bothered you most? And I know that there are several. And I just got through listing off, you know, several major ones with Mike Parenti a couple of moments ago as he closed out PFW in progress today. But pick one. Pick one of the things that you thought about Monday night that really stunk. That you wished you could change. That you would do over in a heartbeat if you could do over. Or maybe you'd have the coaching staff or the players do over if they could do over. What is the one miscue from Sunday night that you'd really like to pick a nit with at this point in time? Webradio@patriots.com. I've got several, as I mentioned. I think up at the top of the list is something that I mentioned with Mike a little bit ago that, quite frankly, I'm surprised it happened because it's very uncharacteristic of Coach Belichick to do this. The one nitpick that I really had that really just kind of stuck in my craw, and I'm not sure I'm going to get rid of it anytime soon, gang. It has to do with the fact that he called the timeout when they had the 4th-and-1 down on the 6-yard line and decided to kick the field goal. I thought that that was, like I told Mike, that was a triple whammy. Number one, they had the first down made. Number two, why did you call a timeout to go for a field goal? If anything, you want to call a timeout to make sure you have the proper, you know, personnel on the field to go for it on 4th down. And then number three, you're already soft in the red zone. You're already struggling in the red zone. Make a statement. Go win a game on the road. That completely and totally flew in the face of everything you're supposed to do when you play on the road in the NFL. You don't play conservatively. When you have a chance to go for the jugular, you go for the jugular. They played that game like they were at home. Soft, conservative, mild-mannered. You have to be, you must be, ultra, uber aggressive on the road. And they weren't. That one play, that one time, that one instance, 4th-and-1 at the 6, an opportunity to go for it. I mean, what's the worst that's going to happen? The worst that would have happened was is they got stopped, and then you put the Colts in bad field position, and then you don't know what happens from there. I just thought it was just, it really was very un-Belichickian. I've just coined a phrase. Un-Belichickian. That's what it was. Not on one count, not on two counts, on 3 separate counts. And that disappointed me more than any other aspect of the game. Sure, it sucked that Jabbar Gaffney dropped a touchdown, okay? That stunk to high heaven. He had it in his hands, and not only did he drop it, he booted it after it. I mean, it could not have been a more fatal flaw than Gaffney dropping a touchdown pass. That's another one that you certainly can find some fault with. There are several others that you can look at. I don't even know that I want to go there because, quite frankly, I am so and completely baffled by the choice that was made. I mean, I told Mike that, you know, frankly, because of all the good things that have happened and because of all the good calls that have been made and all the strategy that has been won in a positive sense, that, you know, I think it's time that, you know, you have to give Coach Belichick a pass because he's not going to bat 1,000 on every call and every gamble that he makes. The problem that I have with this one is that I just don't think that the situation was thought completely through. Number one, you've already wasted a timeout, as I suggested earlier. You wasted a timeout based on some poor information. You know, the 12 players on the field that happened earlier in the game. It wasn't 12 players on the field. They were confused over who was coming off the field. And so if there was any doubt at all, you don't throw the red flag. Somebody fed Coach Belichick some bad information. So the fault on that has got to lie somewhere in the press box where that's concerned with one of the other assistants. And so because you were fed some poor information and you lost the challenge and you lost a timeout, you have one fewer challenge and one less timeout to play with. You cannot, under any circumstances, go into a close game late in the fourth quarter without timeouts, which is exactly what the Patriots did. They got the ball back and they had no prayer of getting the ball down the field and getting it in position, you know, for Steve Gostkowski. There's no shot. No shot at all. And that's unfortunate. So, you know, from field position, from red zone, from timeouts remaining, from philosophy, from everything, it was a complete and total abomination of a call. And I just was left scratching my head over, well, then why go for the field goal? They went for the field goal. I thought for sure they called the timeout there, and I said, oh, that wasn't smart. Now you're down to one timeout. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe they're going to get the personnel package. And then, of course, they make the first down, and you're like, oh. You know, and how many times have you seen that happen, right? You know, you call a timeout, you try to freeze a guy, and he misses a kick, or the other team tries to freeze a guy, and he makes a kick or whatever, you know, because you have a timeout to burn. And so you think, all right, he's calling the timeout there. I'm like, oh, he makes the first down. And then, all right, at least maybe he's going to, you know, bring the right people on the field, and then they can go for it again. And then you kick the field goal? I just, That one's going to stick with me for a while. I don't know about you. That's going to stick with me for a while. This team had a chance to seize control of the AFC East. This team had a chance to play from the lead like their normal, you know, selves have been over the last few years, and they blew it. Now, it's not the only reason that the team lost the game Sunday night. It's not the only reason. But I think it was a large contributing factor on several fronts. And to me, it was the most nitty of all the picks, sort of. I'm sure you have your own. Webradio@patriots.com. So there you go. Shared my biggest nitpick from Sunday night with you, and I hope that you will share yours with me. Mark Kelso, Bills radio color commentator, is scheduled to join us within the next 10 minutes of the program. And then Brian Lowe from Patriots Today and Fantasy Lowdown will join us in the 3 o'clock hour, in the second hour of the program today, and we'll get you caught up to date on all things Patriots. The Bills are an interesting story in their own right, simply because they've struggled now over the last, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. They've lost. They've come back down to earth from 5-1 to 5-3, 4-0 to 5-3, basically. And so now the Patriots find themselves in a flat-footed tie with both the Bills and the Jets, and the Miami Dolphins are only a game back at 4-4. I find the fact that the Dolphins are only a game back at 4-4 to be one of the true upsets of the entire season thus far. Dolphins should be getting a lot more credit than they're getting for being 4-4. Forget the fact that the Jets are doing the 5-3 thing with smoke and mirrors. Forget the fact that clearly I think the Bills are beginning to slide downward now and playing more to perhaps their real potential. Fact is the Dolphins are playing way above where everybody thought that they would be. And if you ask me, of the other teams within the AFC East, who worries me the most? It's the Dolphins. And I'd like to ask you that question today as well. Here's another email question of the day for you. If you don't want to deal with politics, that's fine, although I hope you will choose to do so. If you don't have a particular nitpick, although I think you probably do, that's fine too. Which of the other teams in the AFC East at the halfway mark of the season, which is where we are, through 9 weeks, eight, of course, on the playing field for the Patriots and the other opponents in the division. So you're halfway through the regular season now. Which of the other three teams worries you the most? It's the Dolphins for me. And the Patriots have the Bills, the Jets, and the Dolphins. Bang, 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 right in a row over the next 3 weeks. Something's going to get decided pretty doggone quickly. Dolphins are the one that worry me the most simply because, hey, Patriots have to go down there to play. They got to go down there and play. And, of course, we all know what happened to the game up here a few weeks ago, a little over a month ago. They got spanked. Now, that's not to mean that I think the Patriots will take the Bills or the Jets lightly. No, quite the contrary. I think the Patriots actually will focus in. I think they realize that the Bills are legitimate. The Bills are a true, recognizable threat, that the Bills were off to a great start this season, and while they may be a little banged up, they're certainly capable of turning it around at some point in time. Otherwise, they wouldn't have already done what they've done, and so I'm sure the Bills are going to get the Patriots' undivided attention this week. And then you got to turn around on a short, short work week because you have the Thursday night game. The following week, even though it's here at Gillette, you got a Thursday night game against the Jets, a team that you've already won on the road against. It's the one road win that you can kind of hang your hat on right now. And then, of course, you'll have a couple of extra days to prepare for playing down in Miami, and I think the Patriots will be ready for that. But, frankly, Patriots have never fared very well in Miami. You know it. I know it. Patriots down the hallway know it in terms of historical perspective. It wasn't quite that way last year, but then again, this isn't the team that the Patriots had last year. And I'm sure the Dolphins are looking at like it. It's their one chance at legitimizing themselves. They're licking their chops already. Big 3 weeks here, kids. Big 3 weeks. Which of the three divisional opponents worries you the most? Webradio@patriots.com. That's how you get to us here today on the program. Couple of things that, did transpire on Sunday night. Certainly come out in a positive sense. Wes Welker tied the record for most games with six or more catches to open a season. When he got his sixth catch of the game, which came, I believe, in the fourth quarter, he tied the NFL record for most games with six or more receptions to begin a season. Welker now has had six-plus receptions in each of the Patriots' eight games this year. That ties the NFL record, which was established by Jimmy Smith from Jacksonville in 2001. So congratulations to Wes Welker. That is one of those obscure stats that you certainly don't see a lot of, and yet it's certainly worth mentioning here because of his value to the team. Steve Gostkowski hit three field goals, so he's now 19 for 20. On field goals this season, which, if my math is correct, 95% is what he's connecting on right now. That's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. He is now the Patriots' all-time leader in field goal percentage. He is 60 for 70 in his Patriot career, which is 86%. Yes, that's better than Adam Vinatieri, who, by the way, congratulations, hit the 52-yarder the other night, ended up being the difference in the ballgame. Doesn't surprise me in the least that he hit it, and it probably shouldn't surprise you either. I thought for sure this Patriots team was dead on arrival when the broadcast came on Sunday night and we saw that Lamont Jordan wasn't going to play either. So no Jordan, no Morris, and yet Benjarvis Green-Ellis is starting to make a believer out of me. Do I think he's in every down, every day back, every game back? No. But do I think he has some value to the team? Most definitely. Had a 6-yard touchdown run in the third quarter, his third scoring run of the season. And so his play is beginning to win me over a little bit. All right, let's get to the matters at hand where the Buffalo Bills are concerned. And Mark Kelso, who is on the Bills Radio Network with their analysis, joins us here inside Patriots Playbook. Mark, thanks again for a few minutes today. It's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Let me ask you the obvious question right off the bat. What's going on with his team having lost 3 of 4 now after such an outstanding start? What would you consider to be the biggest problem centering around the Bills right now?
Well, you know, you can take away the Arizona loss. That was just Trent got hurt and JP came in and did a fairly effective job. But again, coming in to the game cold like that and without a whole lot of practice time is very difficult. And they had some success. So that game you can write off. But the Miami game, in my mind, was the biggest concern because they just didn't play well against, I thought, a team that they're better than. Mm-hmm. Personnel-wise, they seemed to have the game in complete control early in the third quarter, and then they let it slip away, which is not the mark of a good team. This team has demonstrated a lot of great qualities this year, but that wasn't a bright spot, no question. And then they come back off that against a Jet team that I think is pretty darn good, especially playing against the run, some of the things they can do defensively, and really, really never got things going as well as they need to, and then a couple turnovers and being on the negative end of that giveaway takeaway, which everybody talks about, did not fare well for them. I think there's a couple reasons. I do think, and this isn't an excuse because everybody's in the same boat, that some injuries are starting to cause some minor problems. I mean, the pass rush has not been as effective as it was earlier in the year, mm-hmm. and that is because Aaron Shobo, I think that's a big reason why, because he's out, and I don't know that they would expect him back this week. That's a cause for concern. The secondary had some issues and will have more issues this week with Dante Whitner injuring himself last week. I don't know what his status will be this week. And I think Marcus Stroud was beat up a little bit, too, and they were getting a great push from their defensive line early in the year, and then I think because of some nicks that they're not quite getting that. And then the offensive line has played well in spurts, but they haven't put together their best game yet by any means. And then they've got some guys nicked up, and that could be part of the problem why they haven't been able to put together their best game, because they had some continuity, and now they've had to move some guys around with Jason Whittle playing and Duke Preston and because of the injury to Brad Butler. So they are a very good football team, I believe, but are going to have to come up with an exceptional effort in New England against a team that's kind of rebounded and found themselves a little bit after the disappointment with Brady's injury.
Right. Speaking of Aaron Schobel, how did he end up injuring his foot? Do you recall what happened and when it happened?
No, I do not. Honestly, I mean, I've talked to Aaron last week, and it's coming along, but again, I don't know that I would expect him this week. I don't know what the official report is on Bill's drive, but he's a big part. I don't know. I know it's something in his foot. I don't particularly know what it is or what the terms of the injury are or what they feel the length of it will be, but certainly his contribution in the pass rush game. And he, you know, last year I don't think he had as many sacks. He didn't have as many sacks, and people were saying, well, he didn't have as good a year. That was hogwash. I mean, he played terrific, really, just played terrifically. I mean, he's a guy that really understands the game and quite often was the guy that was the primary pass rusher or the primary guy getting pressure, so he was being double-teamed quite a bit and could create a lot of havoc, but played extremely well against the run, too. And he's one of those guys, a nine-year veteran. I think he's 9 years, right, eight or mm-hmm, nine, but mm-hmm. He has a motor that just doesn't quit. I mean, he'll make plays down the field, across the field, and he's a big part of that defense. Very quiet guy, but a quiet leader, and I think he brings a lot to the table defensively, and they certainly miss him an awful lot.
If he's not out there, if 94 is not out there, I can assure you Matt Light will be very happy.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
who normally has been playing in his place?
Well, they're gonna use Chris Kelce and Ryan Denny. They'll use those two guys.
Okay.
Ellis has been used for a while. Copeland Bryant. I mean, they'll rotate. They rotate those guys through there as they do the defensive tackles.
Okay.
Spencer Johnson, Marcus Stroud, and Kyle Williams. So they'll use a host of people in that spot. Sometimes they might go with three defensive ends on a pass rush situation. So they'll use a bunch of different players in his stead.
Defensively as well for the Bills, I have to admit I've always been a fan of Paul Posluszny. I know when he was here a few years ago and had that big knee injury, it certainly was a devastating blow at the time. But how is his play? How would you characterize his play thus far this year?
Fantastic. I think he's doing a great job. And if you consider that, I mean, he seems like he's been here about 7 years. He's a second-year guy.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it just seems like he's been here forever. And he and what a knee injury. You talking about a college?
Well,
last year
the knee injury,
he broke his arm.
Now that's right. He broke the arm here.
That's
right.
He broke the arm in New England, and
right.
That was
that's right.
Yeah, the knee injury was something that
in
happened.
College.
I think his junior year in college.
Correct.
He was thinking of coming out, but he's just a terrific young man, and I think has been playing really, really well. And again, part of that's because of the defensive line. I thought had been playing so well, and last week they didn't play badly by any stretch. I mean, I think that offensive linemen for the Jets got to the second level a little bit more than I think Posluszny and some of the linebackers would have liked. They were trying to fight off some of those offensive linemen at the same time to try to make a tackle, and so that's why I think the Jets' run game was a little more effective last week than it had been in previous weeks or the Bills had previously allowed. But I think he's a really exceptional player, understands the game, great leader, strong work ethic, just a really nice young man, and happy to see him as one of the leaders on that unit.
And Dante Whitner, is he out for an extended period of time?
I can't comment on it. I mean, I can comment on it, but there's no accuracy to what I say because
sure.
I have not been over at one Bills drive this week
right.
yet.
Right.
He went out of the game, did not return on Sunday. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's really, I think they confirmed that it was a shoulder separation or something, but they did not confirm or deny that he would play or not play this week.
Suffice to say that everybody walks around with wounded and the Bills have their fair share.
Yeah, no question. The first week of the season or the preseason, you go into the game with very little tape on your body, and after that, it seems like there's always something that's bothering you, and it's a team that can weather those injuries and players that can play through some of that stuff that they're going to find themselves successful towards the end of the year, or teams that remain healthy. But the Bills had so many injuries last year that on the back end will pay dividends because they have guys, a lot of guys that have experience, and everybody on the roster has some extended experience, I think, because of the injuries last year. So that always helps when somebody has to go in for a week or two in somebody else's place.
Mark Kelso, Bills Radio Network, here with us inside the playbook. Offensively, I know that it's been a struggle for Trent Edwards, at least recently, and the offensive line seems to have come down with a little problem in trying to protect him accurately. Is that due to injury or just due to a lack of performance?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think, and it's not that everybody wants to place blame. I mean, I'm an ex-player. I'm not going to place blame because I don't even know. Even as an ex-player, I don't know exactly what blocking schemes are. I mean, everybody wants to say this guy screwed up on that play. I study the game a lot. I still coach it at the high school level. I watch a lot of film during the week to prepare for the broadcast. I can't tell you whose fault it is 99% of the time because I don't know. I don't know if it's slide protection or zone protection or man protection or what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you can give scenarios, but you just don't know. I think the offensive line has been playing well of late, but not well enough, if that makes sense. And I think it's not the same person every play. One play, these guys, you know, one guy blocks really effectively, but there's a breakdown on another part of the line. And then the next play, that guy does his job, but somebody else is not able to do it quite as well as they would have liked. And then you throw in the injuries on top of that, and I hope everybody understands, I think they probably do, that offensive line is one of those critical areas where longevity and togetherness and teamwork are so critical to their performance that if one guy's out, you just don't know exactly how the other guy functions. I mean, they really have to work as a five-person unit, and when they do not, it doesn't work effectively. I know on Sunday it appeared as though there was a big blitz that the Jets had that they picked up the sack on and caused a fumble and I think stung Trent for a little while because
sure.
the corner came off the edge untouched. And it appeared as though that was the running back's responsibility to step up there. And if I read what was going on the sidelines after the play correctly, but again, you don't. I wouldn't know unless you knew exactly what the protection scheme was. But suffice it to say that somebody messed up and let that guy come free, and that was a huge play for the Jets as well. But I think a combination of a lot of things: guys injured, you know, one guy not doing the right thing on a particular play, and then some three-man pass rush by some teams that have been dropping a lot of guys in coverage and causing Trent to hold it a little bit more maybe than he would like. So. Just a little fine-tuning, I think, is all they need, and they'll be back where they want to be.
Sure. Now, if not what you just mentioned, what was most disappointing to you in terms of the loss to the Jets? What was the most disappointing aspect of the game where you expected more and it just didn't happen?
I expected more offensive production. There's no question about that, and I think the Bills did as well. But so there's two things that really bothered me. One, they drive the ball down to the red area, and they create a turnover, which turns into 7 points. That's a 14-point swing right there, a huge momentum changer in the game. And again, whose fault is it? Well, Trent's backing up to throw the football. He didn't get a lot of zip on it because he wasn't able to step into it. Roscoe stumbles coming out of his break for whatever reason. He got his feet tied up or he tripped or something. So he's not exactly where he needs to be when the ball's thrown. So a lot of unfortunate things, but they needed to rebound from that. They did rebound some, but that aspect of it, not real good in my mind, or I'm sure in the mind of the Bills players. But the biggest disappointment, I'm sure, on everybody's mind is the fact that they stole the momentum back with Jabari Greer's big interception. I think, you know, the writing was on the wall there for the Jets to say, okay, we got the turnover, we got the points we need, and you come out and you stop them right here, you get the ball punted back to your offense, they're going to get out of score, you're going to win this ball game. And unfortunately, the Jets put together a great drive and turned it into more points to put the game away. And in those critical situations, I know the Bills feel confident that they can turn the ball back over to their offense, and they did not do it against the Jets in that situation, and that was disappointing.
Well, Mark, I know that your time is short. I appreciate your spending a little time with us today to give us a little insight on the Bills, and we'll look forward to seeing you here this next Sunday.
Yeah, well, I hope it's good from my perspective and not yours, obviously.
But, of course.
You know, I don't speak for the players on this because they want to win, obviously, but I like to see a great competitive game and an injury-free game on both sides of the ball, and hopefully that's what they'll get. The fans will be entertained, and whoever plays better on Sunday will win.
It's time for a little backyard brawling, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Good stuff. Thank you, Mark.
Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. That's Mark Kelso, who does the analysis on the Bills Radio Network, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. I can see where, you know, from a Buffalo perspective, they get gassed up to come play the Patriots. I mean, they've basically led the Patriots this entire season within the division. I'm sure they were some of the fans that were jumping for joy when Tom Brady went down on the season opener against Kansas City, thinking that, you know, hey, we got a shot, and everybody else in the division's got a shot now. Okay, that's fine. That's football. That's the way you play it. And now, after I mentioned off the top here, they've lost three of the last four. They've kind of lost whatever advantage that they may have gained for themselves. And the Patriots have pulled themselves up, disappointing as Sunday's game in Indianapolis was. Teams find themselves in a flat-footed tie. And then there are the Jets also right there at 5-3. I mean, it's remarkable to see this division. You can go without too much of a stretch from saying that the AFC East was one of, if not the worst division in the entire NFL a year ago, to certainly one of the most competitive, if not the best, division top to bottom in the NFL this year. I think that's remarkable. That's a remarkable turnaround. And really, you have the Dolphins and the Bills and, yes, even the dog-ass Jets, even the Jets, to congratulate for that because they've all picked themselves up. They all made, you know, basically they all made some pretty good moves. The Bills just improved on what they did last year. There are many people that thought the Bills were pretty good last year, and their 7-9 record just did not show it, that they lost some close games. And, you know, Trent Edwards, you know, when he came into becoming quarterback and was kind of coming into his own, that team was a heck of a lot better than what they showed as an entity for the entire year, and they got better toward the end of the year. And so they just basically kept up the momentum from last year. And you knew the Dolphins weren't going to be any worse because you just can't get any worse, really, than 1-15. Good Lord, even the Cincinnati Bengals won this last week. Nobody is going to go 0-16. Detroit might? Ah, no, they'll win a game somewhere. They'll win a game somewhere. So it had to get better. And, of course, we all know the Jets made a couple of huge offseason moves, not the least of which was Brett Favre, quarterback. So, you know, the division caught up a little to the Patriots, and the catch-up accelerated, whichever you prefer in the pronunciation guide here, accelerated because of Brady's injury, no doubt. So what you have now is a log jam at the halfway point, all four teams within one game of each other. There's no other division in the NFL right now with all four teams within a game of each other. And certainly there's no other division that has everybody at 500 or better. Now, I'm kind of curious, and I don't know if you've already taken the time to look this over, but in terms of remaining schedule, 8 games left to play for all four of these teams, who do you think has the edge in terms of the remaining schedule that they have left? Well, of the 8 remaining opponents for Buffalo and Miami, Miami has the lowest opponent winning percentage. Their opponents are only at 38%, combined record of 24-40 so far this season. Dolphins are going to face 5 teams in the last 8 games that have compiled 2 wins or less this year. Can you believe that? They're going to play Seattle, Oakland, St. Louis, San Francisco, Kansas City. 5 teams, 2 wins or less each. The winning percentage of Buffalo's remaining opponents is 45%. 1-loss record of 29-35. The Bills have 3 games left against teams with 3 wins or less. Cleveland, Kansas City, San Francisco. That's amazing. I think it'll be somewhat interesting to see if the Patriots decide to stay on the West Coast when they go out earlier this year, although I think we're led to believe that they will do that. The Pats and the Jets both each face another division leader within the AFC. Patriots, of course, have a home date with Pittsburgh, and the Jets have to play the Titans on the road on November the 23rd. Ouch. Patriots also have another division leader. They play NFC West division leading Arizona here at home. So at least the Patriots have both of those games at home. So you'd have to say right now, Miami has the best schedule left ahead of it. Buffalo, a little bit ahead of the Patriots. And the Jets probably have the toughest simply because they got to go on the road and play Tennessee. That's fairly difficult. Miami and New York right now are both 2-1 within the AFC East, so they've got the best divisional records now with 3 games left. Buffalo looks like it has a fairly advantageous situation, but again, from all practical appearances, this could come right down to the last week, go right down to Week 17. Buffalo plays New England in the last week of the season in Buffalo, and the Jets play Miami in New York in the last week of the season. How about that? That's a great way to end the year. How does the NFL know that the AFC East is going to decide itself potentially on the last week of the season? Patriots play at Buffalo. Dolphins play at the Jets. It's amazing. That's pretty good. Got to admit, that's pretty good. Patriots, I believe, in this regard, do have the better home field, the better home schedule over the last several weeks by a slight amount. I mean, they do have to play 2 division leaders, but yes, they do have them at home. And so that kind of all gets back to the original point I made to start the show, where the Dolphins are the team that worries me the most right now. Yes, they're 4-4. Yes, they're a game back of the 3-way tie. But they also have the most advantageous schedule of the remaining 8 games, lowest win percentage of amongst all the opponents. And a lot of that is simply because of the teams they played from last year. Because they finished in last, they have last place teams from their respective divisions left on their schedule. Again, you give the Dolphins credit. They've picked themselves up. Others have not as much. Miami concerns me, and Miami should concern, I think, just about everybody that's a Patriot fan in this particular instance. All right, so just a little bit of the insight as we had with Mark Kelso of the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Brian Lowe will be around to join us in hour number 2 of the playbook. We'll get inside some of the other stuff. We'll hear from the Bills themselves in our Wednesday conference calls later this week. And, hey, Gary will be happy. I'll be here on Thursday. hopefully you'll be happy as well. And I thank Eric Scalavino for sitting in the last couple of weeks, and, of course, Mike Parenti for assisting him last week as well with my college football travels. Now I get to be right here in studio with you this Thursday, and frankly it's good because it's a good old-fashioned AFC East family feud coming up on Sunday, as I kind of alluded to with Kelso just a couple of moments ago. And I'm looking forward to it. Everybody looks forward to the games against family. They mean the most. You play a team twice in a year, you want to get the advantage, and especially now that you have a three-way tie up at the top, you have to win. A loss is almost like losing twice, especially if you lose at home for the Patriots. I was going to ask him, if we'd had more time, I was going to ask him, who needs this game on Sunday the most? You can make a compelling argument, I think, either way. But I will certainly give you the point that the Patriots need it the most because, like I just said, if you lose it, it's like two losses. Number one, you fall a game back of them in the standings, and you're already back of them another game in the one-loss column, and you got to go play them at their home field the last game of the year. Be very hard to make that up. You almost have to, you know, hope you win two and they lose two in order to overly make it up. I think it means more to the Patriots. You have to win the games at home. Now, Buffalo could certainly make a point. You know, they've lost three or four. They got off to such a great start. They're reeling a little bit lately. You know, they need to do something to right the ship. Otherwise, they could see this ship sink and sink rapidly as they enter the second half of the season. I you know, certainly can see both sides of the story. I just think the Patriots, because it's home, at home, you have to defend the home field, and you have to win the divisional games at home more than any other game on your schedule. Yes, you have a chance to make it up, but I think we all know how difficult it normally is to do that. Win the home games, win the divisional games, which puts a double whammy on home divisional games, does it not? Couple of other things that I wanted to get to as well from the Colts game on Sunday. Pardon me for bouncing back and forth a little bit here, and then we're going to get into some of your emails that you've taken the time to write. And again, lots of different things to write about today, okay? If you're just joining us here in the program, joined us late, several email topics to delve into. Number one, because it is Election Day, we're doing our own Patriots.com exit poll. Patriots fans, who did you vote for today?
God bless you.
You can be anonymous if you like. Who'd you vote for today?
Are you ready for some football?
I think he will be very shortly. I hope that you'll share. I mean, maybe you know, it's not so much a Patriots fans poll as it is a football fan poll. Who'd you vote for, and where did you vote? Where are you writing from? Where'd you vote? And if you haven't voted yet, tell me where you're going to vote and who you are going to vote for today for president of the U.S., especially if you're outside the U.S. and you cast an absentee ballot. That's number one. Number two, Nitpick Tuesday. What's your biggest nit to pick from Sunday night? Gave you mine. It was the aborted fourth down timeout field goal attempt, you know, where you get the field goal, but you should have probably gone for it, and you certainly shouldn't have wasted the timeout because you needed it late in the game, as the Patriots proved they did. That was my biggest nit to pick. And then of the three teams in the AFC East, along with the Patriots, down the stretch run as we have hit the halfway point of the season, which of the three teams concerns you, worries you the most? Jets, Bills, Dolphins. Webradio at Patriots.com, the email address 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. So there you go. You're all caught up to date now. You got a lot of things to write about. I hope that you'll take a minute to write about each one of those topics, because I'm sure you have some opinions. Nobody here is short of opinions. Your opinions are what make the program go. Your opinions are what give us opinions to where we can tell you what we're thinking, and then, of course, you can respond to such. Take the time to send us a note and let us know how you're thinking, how you're feeling. And, you know, like I said, there's no wrong answer. The only wrong answer is the one that you don't answer. Couple of other things from the other night. I mentioned Ben-Jarvis Green-Ellis. Scored a touchdown in, what, three of his four games that he's played, and he's actually given the Patriots a little bit more of a bump from the offensive backfield than I think anybody had a right to expect. And so that's certainly a positive coming out of an otherwise dismal night on Sunday. Kelly Washington also continues to excel at special teams. And I'm beginning to realize what a special player he really is on special teams. Flies to the ball. He's usually one of, if not the very first player to the ball carrier on punt teams. I'd love to see him get another shot at wide receiver, but quite frankly, it is what it is, right? So I just wanted to point that out because a lot of times those guys don't get the credit that they deserve. And Washington, I think, is doing a superb job, an absolutely superb job. The offensive line, I thought, was pretty doggone solid against the Colts. Colts are not the Colts of old. But they did a pretty effective job of keeping Dwight Freeney and company out of the backfield, allowing Matt Castle plenty of time in the pocket. I don't believe he got sacked one time. Not that I can recall off the top of my head, and I'm not really looking at any numbers here. And I thought run blocking was superb. I mean, the Patriots outrushed the Colts 140 yards to 47 on the ground. And that was with Joseph Addai back in the lineup. So while the Patriots' run defense was also solid, I have to give some kudos to the offensive line, which has been maligned thus far this season. Not only in keeping Castle upright, but basically because they haven't blocked well at all, running or passing. And maybe it has a lot to do with the fact that Stephen Neal, as I suggested several weeks ago here, that Stephen Neal is playing more and more, and he got the start the other night for Billy Yates. It's a better offensive line with a more athletic player out there, and that is Stephen Neal, period. This team is now, this was the first game, game eight, first game all year, that the team had the starting line from a year ago intact and relatively healthy, because Nick Kasher was out there as well. And look what happened. They looked more like the offensive line from a year ago. So don't ever underestimate, you know, some of these guys on the offensive line. They're all back together now. The team is together. The unit is there. So we have every reason to believe now that as long as they can stay relatively healthy, Matt Castle is going to continue to improve. And we see bits of improvement every week from Matt, and it happened again this last week. The fact that the Patriots lost on Sunday was not Matt Castle's fault. Not a bit of it. I think it's time, though, to unleash him a little bit on offense. I think, you know, he's basically taking what opposing defenses give him. And, you know, for one of the few times in recent years, I heard something extremely poignant come out of the mouth of John Madden. And he was basically talking about how when Tom Brady is the quarterback.
He was just mossed.
Yeah. When Tom Brady's the quarterback, Tom has a way of taking things. And, of course, as Matt Castle is the quarterback, he has a way of just, you know, taking what the team gives you. And then, of course, Brady conversely takes whatever he wants. And I'm paraphrasing basically what Madden said. But he's absolutely right about that. He's absolutely 110% right about that. Brady takes whatever he wants. Castle is taking what he gets. And I'd like to see the Patriots, Josh McDaniels in particular, I'd like to see the Patriots now continue that learning curve with Matt Castle and allow him to take some chances at getting what he wants out of the offense as opposed to just taking what a team gives you. This whole Patriots offense last year was predicated on taking whatever they wanted. That's the biggest difference between this year and last. I'd like to see Castle have the opportunity to have the chains taken off on offense and allow him to go find these guys. Now, granted, a lot of teams are taking Randy Moss out of play. I mean, we saw it, and I thought NBC did a pretty good job of this the other night. We saw them roll over to safety from time to time and make sure that Moss was not going to go uncovered. But the other nitpick, I guess, that I really have is that the Patriots, the entire first half, didn't take one shot at Randy Moss when you have two walking wounded defensive backs and a guy that they picked up off the street last week starting at cornerback for the Colts. Are you kidding me? And you don't take one shot at him? Not one? Now, they could not have possibly done that good a job defending him with an extra safety in the first half. So that's what I mean by unleashing him a little bit, unchaining him. Let Castle take some shots downfield. If it doesn't work, fine. Regroup the next down and come back and then take what the defense will give you. It's time to unleash the hounds, though, when it comes to Matt Castle. We're going to continue to see him improve and get a little bit better. He needs to have that confidence that he can go downfield. He did, of course, try to go downfield once in Jabbar Gaffney, dropped it. I don't think that should keep them from allowing him to go downfield again and again and again. Let's see some deep strikes. Let's see some opportunities to go downfield. Let's see Matt now finally be able to play with the same calls and the same personnel that Tom Brady had. I think we're just now getting to that point in this season. Let's see what he can do with it. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Brian Lowe will join us in hour number two. We'll get to some emails. We got some other thoughts coming up on the Bills. Hour number two of the Playbook coming up.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Food Master, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
The Super League Championship in the history books. The Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place and Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
So Harrell in the shotgun from the 28. The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught.
He breaks.
He's the one.
Touchdown, Red Raider.
Unbelievable.
Touchdown, Red Raider. Michael Crabtree has done it. Michael Crabtree makes the catch at the five, breaks the tackle, and scores.
There's still 1 second on the clock, but Texas Tech, unbelievable, Michael Crabtree.
Oh, my gosh, can you believe that?
Stripper sent you that? He's an asshole, you know? Come on. We understand how incompletely they won the football game. That's absolutely fine. What?
Do you know what you just said?
Yes, I know what I said.
You know you can't say that on the radio.
This is the radio? When did this start being the radio?
Fred says it all the time, too, but I
yeah,
just
that's what
didn't
I thought.
Expect that.
That's why. You know, he just Gary looks at me like I have three heads because I don't usually say things like that. Well, come on. I mean, you know, you have to admit, guy's off the deep end. Completely off the deep end.
But he hasn't sworn on the radio.
Too bad. Too bad. And then you go on, you play the stupid thing. I said last week that the game against Texas Tech worried me more than any other game this year that they played. So the fact that Tech won the game doesn't surprise me in the least. And then there's always got to be somebody that's just got to just jam it in you a little bit, you know? I mean, come on.
Sure does.
You know, that's not right. That's not right.
I'm a little stunned too, John.
Come on.
Wow.
Get over it. Get over it. I'll
maybe,
get over it,
maybe
too.
Now we know why David Thomas didn't have his head in the game Sunday.
You know, that's as good an excuse as any.
Now we know.
That's as good an excuse as any.
And if Vince Young was the quarterback for Tennessee, they would have lost to Green Bay.
That's as good an excuse as any. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Hour number two inside the playbook, and I apologize profusely for anybody who's offended by my remark. Okay? But, you know, strippers knows. He knows.
Yeah.
He knows.
Yeah.
Brian Lowe from Patriots Today and of course, the Fantasy Lowdown joining us here for hour number two. That was I have to admit, it was an extremely exciting game. I was on the edge of my seat. I only got to see the second half, Texas Tech at Texas on Saturday night, just because I had a basketball game to do Saturday night early. And Tech got out to a 19-0 lead. And, of course, everybody keeps, you know, coming by and passing me notes while I'm in the middle of trying to do a freaking broadcast, okay? But they all know because I'm a huge Longhorn fan, which is fine. That's absolutely fine. I don't mind that. You can take the bad with the good. God knows I've taken enough of the bad. And so, you know, you try to, you know, ride it out as long as you can when it's good. Kept passing me notes. I'm like, I don't want to go home and watch this game
right
anymore. You know, let me just get through the night, and then I can deal with my anger and my angst and everything else. And, of course, by the time I get home, Texas had scored to make it somewhat interesting. And I'm like, still not going to win this game. I can't believe they were even in a position to have a lead in that game. And then, of course, they have a chance to ice it, and then the freshman, Blake Gideon, the safety, drops the interception. And the very next play, they throw that pass that you heard. And by the way, Brian now his last name is killing me here.
Lowe.
No. The guy who called the play-by-play for Texas Tech. Anyway.
Gary doesn't know.
No, he is. I was going to say he's a good friend of mine.
Strippers may know.
No. I'm having a brain, you know, flatulence here.
Right.
See, I can't even say the word "fot" anymore.
You're
simply
because
now I'm gun shy over, you know, calling strippers out on the radio. He's going to send me that stuff. I can call him an ass on the radio. You know, that's the way it works.
There's a little more judicious right there. A little better, John.
I know my mom would not be happy with me right
now.
My wife. All right.
No.
Fine.
They don't listen?
No, they don't listen at all. They don't listen
on the bright side, I haven't had a good John Rook soundbite for like 2 years.
Yeah, see, there's the irony.
See, that's what I mean.
There's the irony. He's not happy when you say
word. Just like the Steelers one from a couple of years ago.
To any
Steelers
fans listening, you all suck.
Wow.
Yeah, see, you were the wild
end of
that.
I remember
though, that I was reading an email.
You were.
That was not my personal feeling.
Brady is too girly for me.
That's another email.
I would destroy him in every sense.
See, now I've given him another one. Gary's scrambling on the machine back there to get the...
Gary, I think I kept quiet today when he said that word. I think I was just stunned. I think I was just stunned today. I don't think you have any audio of my mouth agape.
No. I mean, your chin might have hit the microphone, but that's about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Boy.
I'm like, you realize the mics are on, right?
Yeah, I thought too.
Yeah,
maybe
the mic's on.
It's on. Sorry.
So that was a great
game.
He'll
get over it.
That was a great game. I also only saw, pretty much the second half, and I don't think I realized just how good Texas Tech is.
They're good.
And Crabtree is exceptional.
He's got speed. He's got size. He's got strength. He's got everything. Yeah. I still think Graham Harrell's a little bit of a system quarterback.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what is he?
He's okay. He's the best one of the bunch of the Cliff Kingsbury's of the bunch that have come through there.
Yeah.
But I still think he's a bit of a system quarterback. Crabtree, although physically you can see he's got it.
Sure.
He's got it.
Oh,
there's no doubt. So he's very good. But problem with Texas Tech is now that, I'm not still entirely sure they deserve to jump over everybody to get to number two, although I guess I can understand why they did. Tech still has to play Oklahoma State this week, which will be difficult because this is going to be a big come down for them. Okay, so now we're going to learn what Texas Tech is really made of, bouncing back and playing a really good Oklahoma State team that almost beat Texas themselves.
Yeah.
And then after that, they got to go and play Oklahoma. In Norman.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, what's Texas's schedule? Texas has
Baylor this week.
Yeah.
They play at Kansas.
Yeah.
And then they open, then they close with A&M. So, I mean, all Tech has to do is lose once.
Yeah.
And then you'd have, at worst, a three-way tie, and the team with the highest ranking in the BCS wins the division title.
Right.
It's going to be Texas. So, there you go.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Sorry to inform you that, strippers. It's not going to be OU. So there you go. Let's see. All right, let's get to some emails because I've been way too long getting over doing some of these things. And some folks have been kind enough to send us their thoughts here. Below, I actually asked folks in the opening hour three different questions, to kind of sound off on. Number one,
McCain
about the
Obama.
Election day. Yeah.
Yep.
We're doing some Patriots exit polling here.
Yep.
I want to know
how
Patriots fans, or I extended that out to say football fans, because I do know that we do get fans from other teams listening from time to time, especially teams of our upcoming opponent, whether they're Bills fans, and we've had a lot of Colts fans listen in the past, things like that. So, football fan, who'd you vote for? Where you live, where are you voting from? If you haven't voted yet, where are you going to vote later tonight, okay? And who'd you vote for? That's number one. Number two, your nitpick for Saturday. I mean, for Sunday night. Nitpick for Sunday night. My biggest nitpick was the called timeout on the made fourth down, and you still went for a field goal when they should have gone for the touchdown, or at least the first down. That was my biggest nitpick. And number three, of the three teams now that we're in the halfway point, okay? Halfway point of the season, we're through 8 weeks. Or through 8 games, rather 9 weeks. Of the three teams in the AFC East, which one worries you the most down the stretch? Bills, Jets, or Dolphins? I suggested Dolphins because Miami has the easiest schedule of anybody over the last 8 weeks, and the Patriots have to go play in Miami.
Well, if the question is, which of the three do I fear the most of these upcoming three games, is that what you mean? Or do you mean
worries you down the stretch run? I mean, of these three teams, which team worries you the most here for the second half?
Well, yeah, I don't think the Dolphins are going to necessarily be there in the last week of December angling for a division, a spot to win the division. But I do think of these next three games, at Miami is the one that worries me the most. It definitely does. I mean, I happen to think the Patriots are going to be able to take care of the Bills fairly easily. I think the Bills are they're catching the Bills at a good time. Edwards has certainly he's been on a bit of a roller coaster here, and he's on the downward spiral right now. And I certainly don't think they're going to lose to the Jets at home. I think at Miami is going to be the toughest one. That's a pesky team. You know, aside from what the Dolphins did to the Patriots here in September, you know, I don't think we're going to see that same type of game. But the Patriots historically have trouble down in Miami. And I think that's going to be the type of game where, you know, Ronnie Brown is a tough guy to handle. Pennington has had success against the Patriots, especially here in September. And I think these road games, all road games, as I've said from the get-go, are going to be tough for the Patriots. They played very well against Indy, but they're all going to be down to the wire. And I'd say of these next three, it's the one at Miami that would worry me the most as of right now.
All right. Then back it up then. You want to give me your nitpick from Sunday?
Yeah, well, it's what you said on the timeout. I just felt like there were just some uncharacteristic. I kind of felt almost the same way I did as after the Super Bowl. There were just some uncharacteristic decisions made.
Mental lapses.
Mental lapses is sort of, you know, and physical and mental lapses. I mean, obviously the David Thomas play, it's uncharacteristic of a Patriots team. Mm-hmm. You're going to get penalties. They're usually not, I guess with the lone exception of Vince Wilfork, as has been much discussed, they're not usually that type of penalty. You have Jabbar Gaffney, who, you know, he hasn't had a lot of opportunities this year, but in the past, he's a fairly sure-handed guy. He's not the guy that would be at the top of my list of he's going to drop passes that he should catch. And then some of the coaching decisions. Overall, game plan-wise, I didn't have much of a problem with it. You know, the challenge play with the 12 men on the field, it just seemed like that wasn't going to give you it wasn't going to be worth the risk, it seemed to me. And then the going for, you know, it was so uncharacteristic to see Belichick in any sort of anything close to a panic mode. He's running onto the field.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, I didn't like the decision. And the explanation afterwards was, well, we thought it was very fourth and very short. It turned out it was fourth and one. It was the explanation, and they didn't
Couldn't
think
they
that
have
was
seen that. I just
well, the, exactly.
It just kills me though that they call it like that, especially because they blew a timeout on the challenge, which was dumb to begin
well,
with. They got a
saying.
Bad call from the press box on that 12 player on the field challenge. They got
right.
a bad call.
And was the reward going to be worth it? You know, I didn't get the sense that the reward was going to be worth it. It was only going to be a matter of not a lot of yardage. I don't think that they would have lost on that, or they would have gained on that. But mm-hmm. you know. I think you can have confidence in the play calling on those fourth and inches or fourth and one with the quarterback sneak. As it turned out, it looked like they had it. And just the way it all manifested, if they went for the decision to kick the field goal and not go for the first down, it's understandable. It's a 3-point game. You'd be able to tie the game rather than risk getting no points. I understand that. But I felt like you said, I mean, you had 35 seconds there. I don't understand why they didn't realize that it was fourth and a legit one that, rather than inches. So that was, you know, that was a little problematic. I honestly didn't find there to be too much to nitpick in this game other than the obvious. And we've touched on all the obvious. Gaffney, David Thomas, and some of the coaching decisions. Other nitpicks? I mean, where would you, you know, defensively, I thought they did a very good job defensively in this sense. When you're going up against Harrison, Wayne, Clark, Gonzalez, Adai, and obviously Peyton Manning, mm-hmm. and you come to that game with, among others, your cornerbacks are Mike Richardson, Terrence
right,
Wheatley,
right,
Jonathan
right.
Well, mm-hmm. you're not going to shut down all of them, and if you tell me that at the end of a game like that, the worst damage that you're going to get is a 2-touchdown game by Anthony Gonzalez, I'm going to say that you're probably going to win that game 75% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they shut down the run completely, as many teams have against the Colts. It's been a disappointing year for Adai in that run and that running game. And, you know, the Peyton Manning game was almost like Castle, shorter, more, you know, just a short passing game. These teams had long, sustained drives, and that's kind of the way the Patriots felt they would be able to win this game, would be not let Manning unload to these high-profile wide receivers who have done damage to the Patriots in the past. And that's what they did. And then offensively, you know, the Patriots' game plan was similar. Keep it short. They picked their spots on going deep and should have had the Gaffney one. They ran the ball well, especially knowing who they had going into the game. Certainly the red zone, that's really the area, I guess if we did have another nitpick, that's the area that they need to shore up. There are going to be situations down the stretch and in maybe more important games than what they just had where they're going to need to get touchdowns more often than 3 points in the red zone in crunch time situations. They've got to prove that they can consistently do that. Fortunately, Steven Gostkowski is a Pro Bowl quarterback at this point, and when he lines up to kick, he's going to make it, as it turns out right now, about 94% of the time.
Try 95.
So you feel pretty confident. What is he, 19 for 20 right now,
yep.
right?
Yep.
19 for 20. So 95% of the time, you feel pretty confident with him. You're going to need 7 instead of 3 at certain junctures down the stretch. So, you know, I give Castle credit for the way he's improved, the way he's been able to manage the team, and the way he, you know, there was that stretch about a month ago where you started hearing the Kevin O'Connell talk and you started hearing the, is Matt Castle going to keep hold of this job?
Now.
That's all gone. It probably never really existed. I mean, there was no sign that it was really going to exist.
Mm-hmm.
That's all gone now. And I give him credit for never once showing any signs that any of that was bothering him or affecting him. It doesn't mean that he's had all great games. It's just that in that stretch, and I'm talking about, you know, between the Miami, San Francisco, San Diego game, that stretch where they went 1-2, two terrible losses. They had their bye, so there was even more time to discuss it leading up to that Denver game. And since then, he's played very well. You got to give him credit for never once showing any signs that he was bothered by this criticism or that he was looking over his shoulder. And that, you know, the jury, it's not like we knew going in that this guy wouldn't be affected by that. It was good to see that he's not affected by that kind of criticism. He can persevere through that. Again, he's not the quarterback right now that's going to single-handedly win you games, but he's probably not going to put you in position to lose too many games either. Managing the game, if that's the phrase you want. But the red zone is where they're going to need to pick it up because they're going to need
right.
they're going to be in tight
games.
Which
was all the more reason for them to go for it then on fourth down in that particular instance because they needed to be more aggressive in the red zone. That was the point that I had made in the opening hour.
That would have been – no, you're right about that. And that was – you know, you're down by three. I understand the approach. It's still, I mean, where were they in that at that point in the game? It was still they were down by three.
Yep.
And it was what, late third, right?
Yes.
Is that where that was?
Yes, late third.
It was late third. I understand the approach at that time, which is, hey, this is going to be a tight game. Let's even the score right now. Hold them the next. I can understand that. But all things being equal, fourth and one, fourth and inches, it's a low. It should be a low risk play. You should have the confidence in your quarterback and your team to be able to make that.
All right, the third and final question then has to do with your presidential pick.
Yeah.
Who you have voted for or who you are going to vote for.
I thought that was the first
one.
No.
The first one was.
Okay. I'm just backing off here. I don't want to.
Oh, you don't want to. Do you want to answer the question?
Well, you know, I mean,
you haven't voted yet, I tell you.
I haven't voted yet.
Okay.
I know what I'm going to do. I haven't voted yet. It was more circumstantial.
Starting in January, we're going to lay more pipe.
I'm not sure if she's going to be on my yes.
Okay.
If that gives you an idea. No, I had full intentions of voting this morning, and circumstances prevented me from going this morning, but I will be leaving soon after this show.
Don't worry about it. You don't have to go.
It'll all be taken care of by then? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, as a matter of
fact,
they
don't need your vote.
They don't need your vote because he's going to win anyway.
It's not the only thing on the ballot, is it?
I don't know.
John Kerry needs my... No.
Then there's somebody that really needs your vote.
There's some questions to be answered as well. No, I will vote. I always... Since I was eligible
exercise
to vote...
Exercise your rights.
Then that's when they smoke it.
Since I've been... haven't decided which way... No, I do know which way I'm voting on that one. I don't know if you had to vote on that one.
No.
Where you
okay.
No.
Let's go smoke that joint.
No, I will. I will be voting. I voted each and every time since... let's see. How many times have I been eligible to vote? This would be the... Fourth? That can't be right.
Fourth presidential election for you?
That can't be right.
How old are you?
I just turned 3-0.
Wow. Congratulations.
Third. This is the third.
So
no, this
third?
Is the fourth.
Yeah.
This is the fourth.
Fourth
yeah.
One, then.
This is
right.
The fourth.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for you.
How about that? How about that?
Very good.
So hey, I've gotten caught up in the election drama recently and I'm eager to sort of watch the coverage tonight and see how the polls come in. I'm into it.
Good. Excellent. Well, let's find out what some of the fans think, shall we?
I say so.
This one comes from I got to start off here. We'll go down to the bottom of the email. Chris in the Bronx, who says, I'm not a fan of political talk on sports radio. I feel like I should take advantage of the polls, though, and make a bet. Most of you guys, and of course he says Fred excluded, support McCain. I think Obama will win. So if McCain wins, I'll buy you lunch from a restaurant of your choice.
Wait, I think Obama will win. Does that mean I endorse? I mean, you know.
I suppose.
Is that, okay.
I suppose he thinks Obama will win. Throw in some food for Lori and for Christina Acker just to have them in and see what Gary can end up adding to the That's What She Said library.
Gary's game.
Yeah, I'm sure Gary's game for that.
Gary's up for that.
He
right?
was just like, here, hold this. And I said, okay.
And not only is he always ready for new
and
ones,
he's upset.
Always at the
he's
ready.
Got all the, he's got all the sexual innuendos in there. And he's upset for me over saying, you know. Calling strippers
yeah, we,
a name.
We know the word. Well, that's the irony,
you didn't
John.
Call him a jerk, John.
Right. John, the irony is you said that word.
You're talking about, you know, sexual innuendos.
You said
it's not like nobody doesn't know what you're trying to describe when you play those drops, Gary.
Here's your only saving grace.
That really bothers me that some ass and I'll say it.
Okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's my
you
only
said,
saving grace.
You said that
the
word.
The boss said it.
You said that word. Gary was outraged. But now you're never going to hear the end of that word.
Of
maybe
course
with
not.
A beep.
That's right.
In all these drop-ins.
That's right.
Right? Yeah.
With a beep.
Yeah, with
a beep.
With
okay.
a beep. Fair enough.
Because we have to play like we're radio, even though we're not. If Obama wins, I'd like to sit in on a show. It probably wouldn't even be until next calendar year, but at some point I'd hang out at the studio and put in my 2 cents every several minutes or so. If I end up buying lunch, it could be a 20-pack of Dee Dee Munchkins or something. Sorry if this sparks a political discussion. How about them Phillies, if anybody cares? Not me. Okay. Thank you, Chris. So I guess we know which way he's leaning.
Yep.
Okay. How come Benny... this comes from Stephen, or actually Brighty in Cambridge, UK. How come Benny, Ben Jarvis Green
yeah,
Ellis,
the law firm,
right, looks so much more confident in the backfield than Maroney? He looked pretty good against Indy, hitting the hole quick and hard. Will he be on the roster next season?
Who the heck knows? I mean, next season, let's not worry too much. I mean, if he performs well over these, I mean, think about it this way: at this point last year, I don't know if too many people knew who Ryan Grant was. You at running back, you can come from out of nowhere, perform well for 8 weeks of a season. I mean, Ryan Grant started the year last year on the Giants practice squad, right? And then he was on the Packers practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stranger things have happened than a running back coming in and taking hold of his team's running back position for whatever reason and being, you know, the be-all, end-all coming into the next year. I'm not saying Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is that guy this year. It's way too early to say what the makeup of the team will be next year between Maroney, who's on IR, where's he at next year? You know, Sammy Morris, a veteran. It's way too early to say. Let's focus on this year and your comment there about Benny. He does look very good, hard, fast runner.
Benny.
I've heard Belichick call him Benny. Belichick is
I like
has
law
referred
firm.
To him as Benny.
Law firm works.
I don't know who originated that one. I know that was said on NBC, right?
Right, right. So you actually hadn't heard that one in the locker room? Him calling him law firm?
I don't know if I had heard that.
Oh, not Benny Hill?
Benny Hill, that's right.
Benny
that's
Hill.
Right, Benny
yeah.
Hill. BJGE is one way to say it. But he looks very good, very confident, very comfortable. It may be one of those, not having pressure on him types of things. The guy's an undrafted free agent who comes in. And sure, in this locker room, 1 through 53, they're all considered the same. But when Ben Jarvis Green Ellis got his first opportunities a couple weeks ago to run the ball, what's he got to lose? He's just going out there and doing his thing. He's not worried about, you know, is he going to get pulled from the game, contract. And maybe Maroney was. I mean, clearly Maroney, I think, a lot of it was up top mentally. And I don't know much about Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, but the way he's playing, it's a guy who has nothing to lose, who's out there to play hard, hit hard, run hard,
mm-hmm.
and that's what he's doing. And, you know, the offensive line has also improved in recent weeks in every aspect. Run blocking, pass protection, and keeping Castle on his toes. Maybe they have felt the pressure in recent weeks in the sense of, hey, we're down several men at running back. Castle's been getting hit hard. We've been criticized. We've got to pick it up a notch. And maybe a few of those things have just all kind of come together. And Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is a bit of the, he's taking advantage of that. He's looked good, better than anyone could have expected. He coming into the season as basically the sixth string running back. He's performed well. I'm not worried about next year. Do I feel that if Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is in position to get 12 to 15 carries a game down the stretch this year, that he'll get the job done? It'll probably be a week-to-week kind of thing. One week he'll look good. I mean, last week against St. Louis, he scored a touchdown, but he didn't have much yardage. This time he gets some pretty good yardage, scores a touchdown again. He's looking good, better than expected. They still could use Sammy Morris and or Lamont Jordan, because I don't know if you want to go too much longer with this guy as your number one guy.
But, I agree.
You know, maybe,
right.
You know, I mean, hey, he was an accomplished college running back. And like I said, at running back, sometimes you can find a guy off the proverbial scrap heap and he can get the job done for you. And maybe this is the guy. Maybe this is the guy.
James in England says, it strikes me that the coaching staff doesn't trust Castle in key situations in the game. Maybe it's just me, but it seemed that when the Pats are in third and long, they nearly always run the ball. First drive of the game, Pats were at 3rd and 7, might have been 3rd and 6, and we run the ball, and it was the same a few other drives, including the drive at the end of the game when it was 3rd and very long. We end up throwing on 4th and long after the run, but it just seems to me that in key downs, the staff doesn't trust Castle. What do you guys think? And if you think I'm right, surely Castle would have noticed, and that can't be good for his confidence levels.
I don't know if it's as dramatic as you're saying that they run every time. I mean, I think, you know, I've got the play by play right in front of me, and you're right, that first one, 3rd and 6, and I can't remember exactly what was going on, but 3rd and 6 at their own 25, it was a Falk run up the middle. But I see, you know, a 3rd and 3 goes to David Thomas for 11 yards. There was a 3rd and 5, he goes to Moss for 9 yards. There were a couple times where he scrambled, where he was looking to pass. It was a passing play, and just the guys weren't open. There's no question he doesn't, you know, they're not putting him in position and asking him to throw in the same types of situations as Brady. There's no need to yet. And, you know, sometimes you get the ball on a guy like Kevin Falk. It depends on if it's 3rd and long and 3rd and short, obviously. On some 3rd and short situations, you get the ball in Kevin Falk's hands. I think they like what he can do, whether it's a run play, a short dump off, you know, throw in the flat. But I think we're seeing more and more that Castle's getting the full reins of the offense, not unloading them the same way that Tom Brady has in the past. But I think more and more we're seeing that there is some confidence in Castle from both the coaching staff and the players. And, you know, whatever the stats are and how many times they ran versus threw on 3rd down, I think we're going to see more and more that Castle's going to be able to make the right decision on those downs, and there's more trust in him.
Sven in Germany says, I'm running in for the second time, and I have a question about the defense. The Pats were great on stopping the rushing of the Colts, but they had serious issues when it came down to preventing big plays. With Rodney Harrison out for the season, wouldn't it make sense to re-sign John Lynch? I mean, Sanders and Merriweather are good players, but they can't replace Harrison. Lynch has more experience than the two of them and is, like Harrison, still one of the most feared tacklers in the NFL.
Well, don't you think, though, if it made sense to re-sign John Lynch,
they would have done it by now.
Right. I mean, what are you waiting for? It obviously isn't a good idea. Whether that's because his 2 weeks here in training camp, he proved that he doesn't have it anymore, or if it's just because they'd rather go, if John Lynch at the age of whatever he is right now, and say Antoine Spann at the level he is right now, if all things are equal, and Antoine Spann's 25-year-old legs and on his special teams work is going to be better than John Lynch, they're going to stay with Antoine Spann. Trust me, if John Lynch was a guy that could step right in and fill Rodney Harrison's shoes, he'd be here. He'd be here. He's not. He can't.
Yeah, I have a tendency to agree. I was one of those that thought it wouldn't hurt to bring him in, but they obviously did not think that he could do anything for the long at least for the short term this season, more so than what they already had.
Right, and I'm not saying this as like, hey, what Bill Belichick said, that there's nothing behind what Bill Belichick says, but the day after Rodney Harrison got hurt and went on IR, and they added Antoine Spann from the practice squad, Bill Belichick was questioned in his press conference, hey, was John Lynch a possibility to be re-signed? And all Belichick said was, we added Antoine Spann from the practice squad. That's how we filled. That's how that was the roster change from having Rodney Harrison on IR. There is no doubt that if John Lynch was a guy that could help the team more so than the alternative, in this case Antoine Spann, number 47 would be in uniform last week and the week before. Bottom line, that's the bottom line. John Lynch, for whatever reason, not a candidate. He can't bring it. Same thing with Ty Law. We've seen cornerbacks go out, and we've talked about this in recent weeks.
Yep.
If Ty Law would be able to help the team right now, he'd be here. And Jonathan Wilhite would have to find another number because 24 would be Ty Law. That's the bottom line. Obviously, Ty Law can't play right now in the NFL. Are you telling me that 32 teams Not one of them could use a healthy Ty Law, a healthy Ty Law who could still play. Obviously, the guy can't play. I haven't seen him work out recently. I can't say that in my video work of him from the last 12 months tells me he can't play. If a guy like Ty Law is on the street right now, he can't play. He can't play. He can't help any team.
So says
That's
Brian
what I'm
Lowe.
Saying. That's what I'm exactly saying. Exactly right. And this team is not afraid to bring in a Heath Evans in November, a Jabbar Gaffney in October. Who's the other? Artrell Hawkins was another one of those kinds of guys. They're not afraid to bring in these guys if they can help the team. And this year, with the injuries they've had in the secondary, if one of those two guys or someone else would be able to help them, they'd bring him in. Instead, they'd rather have the guy like Richardson or Antoine Spann, who's been around this team all the way through, offseason, training camp, everything, and can step right in, hungry for a job, step in, and they'll live and die with them. They'll go through, they're willing to go through a couple of Mike Richardson growing pains at this point in the season, because if Mike Richardson gets all those out of the way in October and November, maybe he'll be able to help them in December and January, more so than a Law or a Lynch.
Sheila in Clearwater, I think both teams played very conservative on Sunday. Both teams went into that game afraid of making mistakes. Fans went in expecting Clash of the Titans and got two injury-riddled conservative teams planning to inch down the field. As far as any of the disputed plays go, remember, hindsight is always 20/20. All I want to say to anyone not involved in calling the team plays, try making the decision for a challenge before you see an instant replay.
Well, there's no doubt that these are bang-bang plays, and when you're deciding whether or not to throw that challenge flag, you have very, very little time to do it. And I know that this team and this coaching staff thinks through all the scenarios. Like, they've encountered, even in the Super Bowl, right? They encountered this 12 men on the field sort of situation, and it's not like at that moment they're processing all the information as if they've never even considered this scenario. Okay, if we win this challenge, what is the benefit? If we lose this job, they sort of have a feel for that. And, you know, it's a risk-reward kind of thing. You know what the penalty is if you don't win it. You lose a timeout. A timeout could be valuable. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with questioning whether or not they made the right decision there. And sure, hindsight is 20/20. You have a very short period of time to make this decision. It's just like a referee making a call. We have the benefit of replays when you're watching on TV. They don't. When they're looking to call a penalty on a guy, they got to make the decision right there. So you're right. I mean, hindsight is 20/20, but you know, I think it's fair to ask, you know, ask the question on whether or not this was a good call or not.
Strippers, ha ha ha!
Hey, here we
Sorry,
go.
John. Told you, Tech baby, guns up.
So he's taking it well.
Yeah. Of course, he also told me Oklahoma would beat Texas and that Oklahoma State would beat Texas. So, hey, I guess a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then, right, big fella?
And he didn't have any vulgar comeback toward you, huh?
No, I just wanted to show what a bleep he is.
That's
there you
right.
go. See, I said bleep this time.
Bleep, you're definitely
proud of me now?
I am.
I'm learning, right? Okay, William says, I voted for Bob Barr. Now, before an idiot claims that I wasted my vote, I live in Massachusetts. Obama will win Massachusetts. Voting for Obama or McCain is a wasted vote, so why not vote for someone who you agree with?
That's what it's all about. I mean, if that's what you agree with, go for it. I mean, you're allowed to vote for whoever you want.
Voting for Obama or McCain was a wasted vote.
Right.
Because Obama's already going to win, and McCain has no shot.
You might have to get a
so
lot
you're
going to
vote
of
for Bob
friends.
Barr. Well, then I would ask you, William, why the hell did you vote, period?
You're going to have to find a lot of your friends to also vote for Bob Barr to make that not a wasted vote.
Which party was he, by the way? Was he the Green
Libertarian.
Party?
Libertarian.
I voted for...
Hey, it's Christina Akra.
You voted for Christina?
She might get a few write-ins.
Yeah, well, she... Yeah. I actually think she would have been a great candidate. Frank in Old Hickory, Tennessee. I voted for Obama, although I agree that I don't love either candidate. I probably voted more against the incumbent party than for Obama. You know, I think I find with a lot of people that I personally know, the reason they vote for Obama is because they're just disgusted with the Republican Party, and it had really very little to do with the fact that Obama's policies are X or Y.
Yeah, it's a lesser of two. I think a lot of people, it's a lesser of two evils. Too many people still think that
John McCain is going to end up, you know, basically replicating George Bush over the last 8 years, which could not be further from the truth. But I understand that's the way people think, because people just don't think smartly in this country.
That's exactly the way I think you get. I get that sense too. And the people who are tired of 8 years of George Bush think of him as a Republican Party, and they're. They want out. change. Well, yeah. It's probably going to be change either
way.
Oh,
you're going to get change, all right.
It's going to be change.
You're going to get big time change.
It's going to be change either way. I agree there.
You're going to get big change, and it may not be change that you like either. There we go. Gary, those change off my desk. Yep, okay. We got change here.
I might have to do laundry later, Gary. Can I take that change?
Yeah, very good. You still have to do change for your laundry?
Just spreading the wealth, Bilo.
Yeah. It's exactly right. Going to spread the wealth.
That's right. That's right.
I had a baby.
I do have to use change. I actually
for your guy.
Yeah, for your boy.
For my boy?
Yeah, your boy Obama.
Oh, yeah.
Spreading the wealth. See, look, he threw 75 cents out at you.
That's right.
And that's about what maybe $2 would be worth in about 4 years from now. It'd be worth about 75 cents.
Three more of those and I can do my laundry.
Yeah, tonight, there you go. Let's see. Where else was I going here? Oh, okay. So what does that bring us up to in our totals now? I believe I got one.
Oh, you're keeping
two,
a tally here.
I'm keeping a tally. That's one, two, three for Obama, one for McCain, and one for Barr. How about that?
I mean, there's still
maybe the only
minutes.
Place in the world where Barr has an equality with. John
there's still
McCain.
20 minutes. Still 20 minutes on the show, and Barr. You know, I guess a vote for Barr on web radio at patriots.com is not a wasted vote.
Yeah,
I guess.
Right. Okay. Here's another one. It says, John, since you're doing politics, not patriots, on Massachusetts question one. Still reading? Yes, I'd rather not think about the game either. Oh, on the tax cut, can Beacon Hill spend that money better than you? If yes, then why not give them all your money to spend more wisely than you can? It's a good point, actually. It's a good point.
Yeah.
I don't think that they can spend all the money better than me. And even if
so
I screw,
far they...
but even if I screw up, I want to have the right to screw up with my own money. I don't want anybody else spending my money for
right,
me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, so far they've got a ways to go to prove to me that they can spend our money.
That's right.
Correctly.
That's correct. All right, good one here. Mike in Portsmouth. John, voted for Obama. He restores my faith in politicians. Just you wait. Okay, but I'm not going to hold my breath because then I won't be around for Thursday's show like Gary desperately needs me for. As for the Pats, Castle looks
better. You're out anyway.
What's that?
Aren't you out anyway?
No. No, I'm here Thursday. You want me to go Thursday? I'll be happy to go.
No, I have you on the calendar as no John Rook.
That was a no for me in case the Revolution were home. But
oh,
they're not. They're playing on the road.
It's a good point.
So you don't want me Thursday then?
I definitely want you on Thursday. So does Eric.
Okay. Figured as much. I miss my buddy. I miss my buddy, not Eric. Well, of course, Eric is a friend. But I miss my buddy Russell. So there you go. See? Miss, you know.
I have no formal artistic training.
That's right. Mike says, okay, but if Obama restores my faith in politicians, just you wait. As for the Pats, Castle looks better every week, and the Patriots should just print T-shirts like Obama's poster with Castle in red, white, and blue with hope printed beneath. That, I want you to know, Mike, that elicited a yawn from B-Lo.
No, the yawn came before I actually fully heard the email. It's not to. No, I hope, huh?
Hope.
Yeah, I mean, there's hope. There's hope. He's as I said earlier, actually, in an item we're doing on today's show, that you know, if you're a seventh round pick and you're still in the league 4 years later, then you're an overachiever.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing what Matt Castle is doing right now, which is a seventh-round pick who never started in college, and you are the starting quarterback of a 5-3 team, yeah, you're providing hope for your team. Sure,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely. At minimum, you're providing hope. And, you know, he's still got more to prove, obviously, but he's showing more and more signs each and every week that he can make good decisions. He's not going to kill the team in any critical situations. Is he going to win every game single-handedly? No.
But he's certainly managing the team well.
He is.
That's all you can ask, you know, for a quarterback. You know, not only A, with his experience, but B, he's the backup.
And when you look at what some other backups in the NFL,
he's doing great.
He's
compared
right
to
up
a lot of.
He
he's
is right up there.
There. He's probably heads and tails above most of them.
Probably heads and tails above most. You're probably right. And he's also, you know, he's taken some big time hits. He's proven to be more durable than a lot of these other guys.
Totally,
well.
Am right there with you.
Yeah.
By the way, he says, love the show. Best Pats talk available anywhere on the playbook. And mad props to R. Baxter. There you go.
There you go.
See,
your guy on Thursday, right?
Baxter.
He'll be with us on Thursday. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. Okay, this one comes from Kay Brooks. Voted for Obama. Illinois is pretty progressive when it comes to national elections. We were the only state in the Midwest that Kerry took in the last presidential election.
It's a good argument.
Yeah, that's a great argument. I don't think I would make that too popular, Kay. I consider myself moderate conservative, not Republican. I am pro-choice for stem cell research, getting out of Iraq, and staying in Afghanistan. Okay. I am a gun owner, but I am for background checks. And he's voting for Obama.
Wow.
I think you're conflicted.
He wants what, does he want Obama, the Obama Palin ticket?
Yeah, there you go. Now, that's exactly right. That sounds like an Obama Palin ticket. Nice. Nicely done. By the way, that brings us up to 6-1-1. Gary, we didn't count your vote. Are you McCain?
Yes.
Okay, 6-2-1 now. Because I don't think I'm going to get another one.
16 minutes.
Okay, 16 more
minutes. Come on, bar fans.
16 more minutes before our polls close here on Patriots.com radio.
On my map on CNN.com, it doesn't have, you know, as the time all the polls close. I don't think it has the Patriots.com poll closing at 4, so maybe there's still some time.
That's right. Okay, Jack says, hi, John. No, I didn't write in Tom Brady for president, although it did cross my mind. He would have had a better chance at winning than John McCain, apparently. This election has once again degraded itself to a lesser of two evils, or lesser of two qualifieds in this case. I went with McCain today.
You're the man!
I think overall he has answered questions with more confidence, more of a plan, and more conviction. Then, yes, we can change. Well, I can't really argue that point. I also agree. And like I said early in the first hour, my whole point, I consider myself a fiscal conservative, social moderate. And I thought that more than likely John McCain fit what I was talking about.
Profanity-laden talk show host.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, we all have our days, right? But, you know, I just thought – I'm not enamored with either one. But when it all come right down to, you know, actually, you know, marking the ballot, I was more confident in McCain's ability to deal with foreign policy. I thought he is the experience factor way over – Obama. I mean, the fact is that some people are comparing Obama to John Kennedy when he was elected in 1960. And that argument is just so absolutely wrong. It's not even funny. John F. Kennedy served in the House of Representatives as a congressman in 1946, a full 14 years before he even ran for president. So even though he only served one term as senator, like Barack Obama, he served four terms as a congressman. He has everything in terms of experience over Obama. And it's for me, in this day and age, when this world of ours is as volatile as it is, both from a security sense and a financial sense, I want someone who has the experience of being in the political circles that makes it just makes me feel better. That's
all. Well, it's true. I mean, before 2004 here in Boston at the convention, I mean, no one knew who Barack Obama was.
No.
I mean, there's something to be said for that, right?
Yeah.
And McCain.
I haven't swayed you, though, have I?
Well, I still haven't voted, but no. I mean, and McCain, I mean, what hasn't McCain done? I mean, experience wise, you know, he's been in the public eye and been a senator for so long and has experience, you know, and we've, you know, we've heard in the debates, I mean, he just, as far as foreign policy goes, I mean, McCain can rattle off whatever he needs to know, and Obama doesn't. But.
Bob in East Boston says, I voted for McCain Palin. Mostly because I am troubled by Obama's friendships and associations with some rather scurrilous folks like Ayers, Resco, Reverend Wright. As the old proverb goes, tell me who your friends are, and I will tell you who you are. Ooh, I like that proverb. I may have to remember that
Might have to use that one, huh?
If I had to pick a miscue to do over, it would have been calling the timeout on 4th-and-1. Yeah, that's a. I had a feeling that would be popular.
Is that winning the votes, the winning the poll?
Actually, we haven't had too many nitpicks today. Everybody's going politics today. They had ended up making the first down and probably would have scored and won. That was obviously my feeling as well, Bob. Great show as always. Here's to a big Pats victory over Buffalo on Sunday. Okay, that makes it now 6-4-1. McCain's creeping in there. Come on, let's go. Where are you?
12 minutes.
Jack says, all right. This is, I can't believe how this happened, but Bill, God love him, gave this game away. Yes, I would love to kick David Thomas in the shins. Yes, I would love to pour crazy glue on Jabbar Gaffney's hands. Yes, I would love to stand next to Josh McDaniels and say, hey, see the tall guy wearing 81? He's on our team. Throw him the ball. But this boiled down to Bill on this one. People are outraged because Bill so rarely makes these blunders. The timeouts were stupid. The challenge was stupid.
The worst one for me was after the Thomas penalty. 3rd and 16, and they line up for Kevin Faulk next to Castle for a handoff run. What? You know the D-line of the Colts was saying, gee, I wonder what they're going to do here. I understand the conservative play against Manning, but it was too held back. Castle's improving every week. Let him throw the ball. Jack, rack him! Emailer of the week right there. Oh, that's a different show. Sorry.
He makes a good point about...
That was perfect. Those are my sentiments exactly, and I've taken an hour and 50 minutes to say it, and he said it in about two.
Not bad. Not bad.
That's good.
And he makes a good point about after the Thomas penalty. You know, the Thomas penalty, if that didn't happen, they're at 3rd and 1, and they're in field goal position, a long field goal, but they're in field goal position, a 47, 48-yard field goal, and then they get pushed back to just about to midfield, the 46-yard line of Indianapolis. And, you know, I guess knowing that it was a time where they probably were going to have to go for it on 4th down, whatever they got on 3rd, you don't necessarily have to go for broke on that 3rd and long, but it didn't seem like that dump off pass to Faulk had much of a chance of getting much yardage. Would have liked to see them go downfield a little more, maybe not go for it all, but go downfield a little more, put themselves in a more manageable 4th down, 4th and shorter, 4th and 5 maybe, and you know, give yourself a little more of a chance. It's, you know, they're down by 3 at that point. If you can't get yourself in field goal range, at least make it a more manageable 4th down play. So the dump off to Faulk just didn't seem like it had a ton of chance of making.
This email looks like it came from someone who sends us some spam. Download a chapter of the book which of the play based at Sex, Drugs, Clinton, and Me.
Boy.
That's great. Okay.
Is that nice. A vote for...
It's the true story of how I snuck into the White House and while there got a job working for Hillary Clinton before becoming a homeless heroin addict, going to prison and getting clean.
Who's this?
I don't know. Don't want to
know.
Are
we endorsing this?
I don't know. I don't want to know. Somebody spammed me.
Somebody's trying to sell some books, huh?
I guess. All right. Okay. John sends an email here and says, that Gaffney drop. Yeah, it was Castle's fault. You may think I'm crazy, and you'd be right. Upon seeing the 85 replays of that missed catch, it was too perfect. The nose of the ball fell directly between Gaffney's hands. I sense a little tongue-in-cheek here. The sides of the ball never hit his open hands. Therefore, the ball just pushed its way through. I do appreciate Gaffney's extra effort to kick the ball into the end zone, but too little too late, Jabbar. Well, actually, the Revolution could use him, I think, Thursday, right? That was a hell of a kick.
Especially, it's not a round ball. I mean, it's a tougher ball to kick.
I know. It's what I mean.
But it's what made the play look even worse for Gaffney is that he just kind of, it was like a comedy of errors. He kicks the ball. He falls flat on his face in the end zone. And I'll tell you what, Jabbar Gaffney after the game was taking it hard.
Yeah, and I have to admit, he stood up to the music,
he
took full blame, and he was more than a stand-up guy for it.
He did, and he knows, you know, this is a year where he's not getting a ton of opportunity. I mean, how many balls have been thrown his way this year? 10, 12, maybe? This could have been his one opportunity this year to make a game-changing play. That would have been the first game-changing play I think he would have had this year. And it was right there. I mean, the nearest defensive back was, you know, 1, 2, 3 seconds away. I mean, an eternity on a football play from making a play on it. And it was right in stride. It was a great throw. And, you know, the thing is, we've seen from Castle that when he makes a throw like that and makes a touchdown pass, usually to Moss, he gets a little extra pep in his step, and it gives him just a lot more confidence. It was early enough in the game that even if Indy came back, I feel like Castle would have, it just would have given him more confidence to make those kinds of throws down the stretch even more. And, Gaffney was taking it hard. You know, as well he should. I mean, I'm not saying the guy deserves to be cut or anything, but, you know, that's a big play, a play you really have to make. You're a veteran receiver in a game where there wasn't, they were having trouble getting into the end zone. It's a play you have to make. He wasn't able to do it. But he's the kind of guy that, you know, I think I'd still put him in those spots. I don't think he's going to be, I think he's still, on the whole, reliable enough.
Yeah, well, I hope they get a chance to go to him again.
I do.
And I feeling they probably will on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, it might be one of those cases where get it to him,
get it
out of his system.
Get it out of his system,
possible,
let's get by it as quick as it can.
Yeah.
John continues and says, yes, of course, I'm kidding, but this is the only way I can cope with Bill making mistakes because it just doesn't happen. I'm worried mostly about Miami. It's weeks away, but I want to see us go to Miami and just decimate them. And I want Joey Porter's only comments after the game to be, what?
Well, yeah, Porter. Yeah. Porter backed up his comments last time coming in here. What do you end up with, three sacks or four? Maybe they actually gave him. That team is proving to be a tough out. I'm telling you, Patriots fans don't need to hear that. They know. But that team being 4-4 is probably more of a surprise than the Bills being 5-3.
Mm-hmm.
Miami 1-15 last year, just a train wreck. And they bring in Pennington, who's a good quarterback, but you bring him in August, and Ronnie Brown coming off an injury, and there's so many, not a great team and so many question marks. The fact that they're 4-4 is very impressive, and they're going to be fired up for that game to show that the win over New England in New England wasn't a fluke.
Sure.
And Sperano clearly is the kind of guy who can rally the troops. That's going to be a tough game for the Patriots. It really is.
Strippers. Says he voted. Voted for Harold of Crabtree for play of the year. See, now, what did I say he was, Brian? What did I say he was?
Strippers?
Yeah.
A stand-up guy.
Can't sucker you into it either, can I?
I don't think you actually.
An arse, only an arse.
Right. You just, you didn't come down too strong on strippers.
No, not at all. It's kind of showing his true colors, I'd say now.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. William, why I tried to avoid football after a loss. First off, I know you have to. It's your job. If they win, I can nitpick on the negatives. If I nitpick on the negatives, I get depressed if those negatives cost the game. If I accentuate the positive, I feel like married Todd Lincoln discussing how good the acting was at that play. I also wonder if I'm fooling myself. For example, not really, did Vince Wilfork look good only because passing over him was so easy?
Did Vince Wilfork look good because passing over him was so easy? What is that, a joke about, sure, how short he is? Or
yeah,
is it,
I don't know. I'm not really sure where that comes from, but... Okay, his point is that he tries to avoid football for a bit after loss because he just gets too emotional and he's not rational.
Well, you can have other things in your life that you pay attention to on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and wait for the next game later on. But it's healthy to to analyze and dissect a loss as well. I don't know where he's going with that one, but
Mark in upstate New York says, John, I voted for Obama. And that's it. So he gave us a vote and exit poll. That makes it 7-4 and 1 now. Yeah.
With time really running out now.
Yeah, time is running out now. So, okay.
You
so
know
that's,
something? You suck.
Yeah, well, that's there you go. Okay, good. So we had, of the people who responded and voted or took the care to share their votes with us today, 7 for Obama, 4 for McCain, 1 for Barr.
Barack Obama?
Yeah. No, just Barr. No,
Barr.
So there you go. Doesn't make you feel too confident about tonight, does it? Are we a little microcosm of society as a whole?
No, we're the unwashed masses.
We're the unwashed masses.
So that's
unwashed masses.
7-4-1.
Yeah, 7-4-1.
Seven out of 12 votes.
Seven out of 12 votes.
Just over 50%.
Mm-hmm. Apparently that's what a lot of, that's what a lot of the polls said. In fact, the last poll I saw last night from NBC had. Barack at Obama at 51% and McCain at 43%.
That's is the country rallying around one guy, huh?
I suppose.
We're going to lay more pipe.
Yeah. Don't forget, if you elect her as vice president, we'll lay more pipe. So there you go.
Now that's a slogan they should have gone with.
You know what? I give her a lot of credit for being goofed on and having the guts to appear on Saturday Night Live, too. I think that was a stand-up thing to do. I don't think it was necessarily a great thing to do, but it was a stand-up thing for her to do.
And both McCain and Obama had the guts to appear with Chris Berman at halftime last night.
Well, that wasn't near as bad as going on SNL.
No.
Where they like to kill you, So, anyway. I thought that was pretty cool. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, so how about Patriots today? What do we got?
Patriots today, we are wrapping up the indie game, talking a little bit about what we talked about today with Castle. I feel like at the midpoint of the season, he's not worrying. There's no more. Is Kevin O'Connell going to jump in? He's kind of making some strides here, and the stats are showing it. Talking about that, we got a good feature that actually originally appeared in All Access with Heath Evans, who's got a very important cause that he and his wife are involved in. It's a pretty good feature that Christina Acker was involved in as well. And so we've got a good Tuesday episode, a little bit of what some of the guys had to say right here in this studio on WEEI yesterday.
Okay.
We're starting to look towards this critical three-game AFC, all AFC East stretch. And we'll have much more to come on the Buffalo game leading up.
said off the top of the show that this 3 weeks was the season for all practical purposes.
It is. It is.
This is it.
It's, you know, and the AFC East is so tight right now that it could be that after these three games that nothing really is decided because of how tight it is. But if the Patriots can go 2-1 or sweep through this, they take a commanding lead, and
they can be back in a familiar position.
Exactly, and then right after this stretch is that what's going to be a huge game against Pittsburgh for what could be very critical AFC playoff.
Well, I think they have to win the three division games. If they win the three division games and they go and they are then 8-3,
yeah,
then Pittsburgh will be for a seeding. That game will be for a seeding.
Oh, sure. If the Patriots sweep this and go 8-3, then
they sweep it and go 8-3, then that game with Pittsburgh,
it could be for a bye.
Absolutely, it could be for a bye.
Yeah.
So that's what Patriots fans have to look forward to.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's real interesting because of how tight it is. I mean, last year, if you said there are three games in a row against the division, yawn. Now this is, you know, Buffalo, New York, and Miami all have thoughts of getting to the playoffs. So these are going to be three tough games. Very interesting stretch And you know, we'll see what happens. Two of the three at home, that's big. Two home games within a 5-day span. I hope the PA announcer has his has his water and isn't has his voice is in good shape for that.
He'll be in good shape and no cursing.
Yeah. Well, let's hope on
we'll
the PA
keep the profanity
system
off the PA.
Yeah, on the PA system, that's a little.
Yeah, just don't write it. Hey, just don't put it in the script because you know I read what I write, what's written. Okay,
someone could play a joke on you, John.
Well, I
go
think
f-
it,
yourself, San Diego.
Yeah, I think after 30 years of doing stuff like that, I probably can overcome
it. Now, I suppose there could be a Revolution playoff game in the mix at that time as well. So you really better lay low.
Only if they score a goal and shut Chicago out.
That's
right.
Yeah, that's right.
On Thursday. That's all right. Good stuff. Hey, I believe In the Hall with Brian Morey is next, but
it should be. But he never shows up. So. We have a Patriots Monday replay coming up.
Okay, so there you go. And tomorrow's program, we'll get to conference calls with the Bills players. And our thanks to Mark Kelso from the Bills Radio Network for giving us a little taste of the Bills today. And we'll get more of that on tomorrow's program. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, kids.